Atlantic to the Pacific, from mountain crest to mountain crest, from canyons to the clouds and into the cosmos, we are pumping wattage high and low, plus streaming worldwide on the internet and keeping you company tonight. It's the place to relax and hang out. I'm your host, Joshua P. Warren, and this is Speaking of Strange, giving you the latest and discussing the weirdest. We have assembled the finest team of reporters and the most intriguing guests. And that's why we are your favorite hub in a wild world. So keep it tuned right here. We are, of course, talking about things related to this weekend, St. Patrick's Day weekend. And, of course, last week we talked about leprechauns. And so tonight our topic for this hour number two is going to be spirits and spirits. That is to say, the relationship between booze and the paranormal. Here in the studio with producer Hardwood Forrest Connor, we have investigator Shelley Wright of Wright's Coin Shop. And by the way, Shelley's website is now up, wrightscoinshop.com. What do you think about that, Shelley Wright?
I think it's fabulous. It looks wonderful. Go see it.
Pete Shepard did a fantastic job, and he's already working with me on doing some more web work. So, Pete, once again, thank you.
Thank you, Pete. You're amazing.
Yeah, he's really, really good. You know, to be an internet artist, you have to be a person who understands a lot of technical stuff, and you also have to have this sort of aesthetic vision for how to put things together. And Pete Shepard is one of those guys who can do it. So we'll be working with him a lot, I think. Okay, let's talk a little bit about this odd relationship between high alcohol content drinks and the paranormal. You know, when I was thinking about this topic and doing some research and whatnot, I felt that maybe one of the things that we should just start with is this interesting story about what is traditionally accepted as Jesus's first miracle, turning water into wine. And even though wine is not considered a spirit because it's not that alcoholic, and we'll get to that breakdown in a minute, it's still pretty interesting that we have this sense, this impression, you know, that Jesus turned water into wine. And this comes from what is called the marriage at Cana, or the wedding at Cana, first miracle of Jesus in the Gospel of John. In the biblical account, Jesus and his mother, the Virgin Mary, are invited to a wedding, and when the wine runs out, Jesus turns water into wine by performing a miracle. And apparently, okay, John 2:1-11 states that while attending the party, Jesus' mother told Jesus, "They have no wine." And Jesus replied, "O woman, what have I to do with you? My hour has not yet come." And his mother then said to the servants, "Do whatever he tells you." So Jesus ordered the servants to fill containers with water and to draw out some and take it to the chief steward waiter. And after tasting it and not knowing where it came from, the steward congratulated the bridegroom on departing from the custom of serving the best wine first by serving it last. John adds that, quote, "Jesus did this, the first of his signs, in Cana of Galilee, and it revealed his glory, and his disciples believed in him." Now, of course, you have the people out there who are like, "Oh, well, that was just grape juice or whatever." But come on. It was wine. You try, well, I know it may not apply here, but you try storing wine, or excuse me, storing grape juice in the middle of the desert, it becomes wine pretty quickly. But nonetheless, I think that's pretty interesting that even by the conservative biblical accounts, Jesus made wine. I don't know if Jesus drank wine or not. How would I know? But it's an interesting story, don't you think, Forrest?
It is.
But as I mentioned, wine is not what we now call a spirit. We call a spirit a distilled beverage that contains no added sugar and has at least 20% alcohol by volume. Popular spirits include brandy, fruit brandy, gin, rum, tequila, vodka, whiskey. And distilled beverages bottled with added sugar and added flavorings, like Grand Marnier, Frangelico, Schnapps, those are liqueurs. So in common usage, the distinction between spirits and liqueurs is widely unknown or ignored. Consequently, all alcoholic beverages other than beer and wine are generally referred to as spirits. Beer and wine, which are not distilled, are limited to a maximum alcohol content of about 20%. So, why do we call them spirits? Well, it actually comes from the ancient Arabic word al-ghul, which back in those days, thousands of years ago, al-ghul was the name of a body-eating spirit. In fact, the English word ghoul comes from the same word. So when Arab alchemists ingested alcohol, their senses kind of deadened, and they named the substance according to its, quote, body-taking qualities. So knowing this, European speakers who understood the etymology coined the use of the term spirits for alcohol. So basically, there is a direct connection there between the idea of a spirit that enters the body or eats the body, that somehow infiltrates the body, and what happens when you ingest alcohol. Now, this term goes back so far, it's impossible to know for sure exactly how all this came about. But there is a clear relationship there. Now, we've all seen in movies, or maybe you've seen it in person, when somebody is about to take a drink of alcohol and they're like, hey, I'm going to pour this out for my homies, right? Do you know what it's called when somebody pours a little alcohol out for their dead friends and loved ones?
No.
It's called a libation.
Ah.
That's where that term comes from. It's a ritual pouring of a liquid as an offering to a god or spirit in memory of those who have died. Commonly used in many religions of antiquity and continues to be offered in various cultures today. Now, libations have not always just been alcohol. It could also be olive oil. But usually it's wine, or in India they call it ghee. And the English word libation derives from the Latin term libatio, which is an act of pouring, which comes from the verb libare, which means to taste, sip, pour out, or make a libation. So, again, all these little variables kind of come together and add up to the same basic phenomenon of believing there is some connection between the spirit world and alcohol. And, you know, last week on the show, when we were talking about leprechauns, I talked about the fact that, you know, leprechauns and various little people, they like tobacco, baked goods, and music. And really, who doesn't? Well, you know what else they like? They like alcohol. Leprechauns love, of course, Irish whiskey. And this time of year, especially St. Paddy's, the Irish car bombs are very popular drinks here in the U.S. I also mentioned last week that you wouldn't walk probably into a bar in Ireland and ask for an Irish car bomb. Forrest?
Yes, sir?
You and I had an Irish car bomb a week ago.
We did.
You know what's in an Irish car bomb?
Guinness and Bailey's.
Yeah, that's right. It's you take a pint of Guinness,
And actually, it's less than a pint. It's like maybe 3/4 of a pint of Guinness. And you take a little shot glass that has something like Jameson Irish whiskey, and sometimes they top it off with a little bit of Bailey's Irish cream. And you drop it.
Right.
You drop the shot glass into the beer, and you down it.
Right.
And I think these types of drinks are really called Boilermakers,
yeah,
where it's like a beer-liquor combo. You down the thing. Now, you know what? Wasn't I making fun of you, actually, Forrest?
You were.
I think I said I was going to haunt you because, okay, Shelley, you and Forrest and I, we were sitting there in the bar.
Yes.
We order up 3 of these Irish car bombs.
Yes.
You drop the shot glass in, and you down it. I slammed mine, you slammed yours.
Yep.
And yet, big old Forrest Connor here, he's a big man. How tall are you, Forrest?
6'3".
6'3", okay, so you're an inch taller than I am.
In some perspectives, yes.
Not many, but yeah. And so, you couldn't down your Irish car bomb. What is wrong with you?
I'm just not a big... I'm not a big Guinness fan to begin with, and B, I'm not a big like creamy like liquor drink fan to begin with. But by God, I did it.
An Irish car bomb tastes a lot like chocolate milk, actually, when it's done properly.
See, I don't like chocolate milk.
What? Are you an American? Where do you don't use ketchup? You don't use mustard. You don't use mayonnaise.
I use mayonnaise.
You do use mayonnaise.
Yes.
Okay, well, that kind of makes sense. But you don't like chocolate milk?
Not a big fan of it. I mean, not a big fan of much dairy at all.
I think I'm going to contact the Obama administration and see about deporting you.
Okay.
I don't think that you're a good American if you don't like chocolate milk and ketchup and mustard. So what's going on here? Okay, do your mom and dad like these things?
Yeah.
So genetically, there was just a messed up gene in there, or what happened?
I guess, yeah, if you consider it that way. I mean...
do you like a hot dog?
No.
You don't like a hot dog?
No.
Shelly loves a hot dog. I can tell by the look on your face, don't you?
I do like hot dogs.
So you're sitting here and you're letting a woman here outdo you when it comes to drinking a classic Irish drink and basic Americana.
oh, look at that. We got to go to a break.
Wow. Okay, this is flying by. Okay, when we come back, I'm going to tell you a creepy story that has to do with the relationship between bars and booze. I'm Joshua P. Warren. You're listening to Speaking of Strange.
Thank you. getting started. Guzzling down the pints and knocking them back like candy. He was looking my way to be drinking all night, and Nora brought out the brandy. Johnny Tarr. And even if he started to sell, you wouldn't believe it, but I wouldn't trust a person like me if I were you. Sure, I wasn't there. I swear I'd have an alibi. I heard it from a man who knows about me. He drank the whole damn bottle, had another pint or two. When it made no impression, he started a session with Murphy's Millennium Brew. He was waiting for his pint when his face turned green. Jesus, Johnny fell down after only 15. Now you could have heard a pin drop, and the crowd let out a roar. It took 5 carved women to lift Johnny off the floor. The doctor looked him over, said you better call the hearse. But it's not what you're thinking, it wasn't the drinking. This man died of thirst, Johnny Tarr.
Yeah, this is a show where the unusual becomes usual, and we are celebrating St. Patrick's Day weekend with part two of our St. Paddy's editions. I'm Joshua P. Warren. It's Speaking of Strange. And before we continue here with this discussion, let me also tell everybody that, you know, I am this year putting a lot more effort into setting up the Bermuda Triangle base down in Puerto Rico. And I'm going to be bringing a lot of night vision technology down there. If you want to see some of the footage that you can capture with night vision goggles when you look up at the sky, go to paratemporal.com. That's P-A-R-A, paratemporal.com. And just see some of the info there on what night vision can accomplish. Now, right now, Forrest Connor is he's taking some pictures in the studio. And, Forrest, you're going to be placing these on your Twitter account,
yeah,
is that right?
I'll place them as soon as possible here.
Do I need to zip my pants back?
No, I just got you from the waist up. You're fine.
Okay, that's the good thing about sitting at a counter here. What is your Twitter now, Forrest? Again, what is it?
SOS Hardwood.
SOS Hardwood. And you already are seeing those fan numbers rise.
I am.
Okay.
I am. We've got the best fans in the world.
Well, we actually do. You would expect us to say that regardless, but it happens to be true in our case, doesn't it, Shelley Wright?
Yeah. It does. I had another listener come in to see me today.
Oh, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
And so, anything to report? I mean, did this listener do anything amazing?
Well, this listener has come to see me before.
So if you go to SOS Hardwood, that's at SOS Hardwood, then you can see the embarrassing photos that Forrest is shooting of us in the studio. You know, we do have the ability to do a live web feed in here, but we decided not to do that because we just knew that eventually we'd get into trouble if people could actually see what we do in here.
Oh, yeah, that would not be good.
Well, yeah, check my account or your Twitter account, which is?
At Joshua P. Warren. There's no period after the P. At yeah, Joshua
so,
P. Warren.
So check those two accounts. We'll hashtag Speaking of Strange on there also if you want to see some behind-the-scenes photos of what goes on here in the studio.
Excellent. Now, Forrest, you go to Ingles and do a lot of your shopping.
Local grocery store, yes.
Ingles is the dominant grocery store around here in Western North Carolina, and really not just WNC, but around this part of the South. I mean, it's an empire. It's a grocery empire. And do you ever go into Ingles and order wine, either of you?
No.
You don't? You really? You guys don't go and... I'm sorry.
And order wine?
Buy wine.
Yes.
But you buy wine, right?
I buy wine, but I don't know the... Well, yeah, I have bought wine.
You bought wine at Ingles?
Yeah.
We all have. So, do you notice that when you buy a bottle of wine at Ingles, they take a moment and they make sure to put it inside of a brown paper bag?
Yeah.
Yes.
Now, why do you think that is?
Brown bag laws.
But it's not like we're going to walk out into the parking lot
and pop open the wine and start chugging it in the parking lot, right?
Well, I guess the, I don't know if trying to hide it from the Baptist or the other religions that think that, that drinking is bad, that Jesus said you're not supposed to drink wine, you're supposed to drink grape juice.
He just creates it for you at your party.
But it doesn't say if it's fortified or not.
Well, yeah, see, I think it's weird because I did some research on this, and the only logical explanation that I found is exactly what you said, Forrest. It goes back to this tradition that when you buy booze, they put it in a brown bag so that you can conceal it when you walk out the door if you want to just start chugging it because, you know, you don't want to get in trouble for drinking alcohol. And apparently, you know, if you have a bottle there that's obviously alcoholic, well, then that's probable cause for the cops to come up and start enforcing whatever the alcohol laws are. But I don't understand why you can go into Ingles and buy $200 worth of groceries, and from all the groceries you bought, they'll take that bottle of wine and put it in a brown bag for you.
Probably so it won't get broken on the way home.
But does that make a difference?
Well, yeah, I don't want broken wine.
But how is a paper bag going to make that big of a difference versus a plastic bag over whether or not your wine gets broken?
Well, it protects it better than plastic does, especially...
Scientifically, by like some minute percentage of a fraction of...
You put your wine in a plastic bag, and I'll put my wine in a brown paper bag, and let's see which...
You think it makes that much of a difference?
I think it does. I appreciate them doing that.
I would like to have... whoever enforces this policy at Ingles, come on and give the explanation.
Well, I don't think they enforce it anymore.
Well, all I know is every time I buy a bottle of wine, somebody behind the counter, you know, takes a moment, and it's great. I appreciate that they're putting some care into my products, but, you know, they take a moment to put it in a brown bag before they stick it in the bag with the rest of my groceries.
Right, so it doesn't get broken.
I don't think it makes that big of a difference.
Well, fine. I think it does. I appreciate that they do it.
Well, okay, so scientifically we could probably test this.
Okay, what doesn't make sense is on Sunday that you can't buy any wine or beer at a grocery store or even at a restaurant before noon.
Yeah, that's just North Carolina nonsense, you know. All right, so, okay, before the break, I mentioned that a lot of bars are haunted places, and I think it has to do with the fact that alcohol really does attract ghostly phenomena. I think there are a number of reasons for that. But there is a bar here, it's really a restaurant that has a bar in Asheville that we love and we include on most of our walking tours called Zombra. It's a tapas restaurant. Not topless! Waka waka! It's a tapas. So a little Spanish dishes. And they have a very haunted bar. In fact, their bar is so haunted that if you sit in a particular seat, sometimes people would get shoved off of their bar stool. After they opened up, you know, they had problems with people coming, like employees coming in and finding the oven had been turned on in the middle of the night, which is very dangerous. They had employees that were scared to death because they would go downstairs and see this big, dark, shadowy form. And so you know, the story behind Zombra is so extensive that you really should take one of our Haunted Asheville tours to get the full story. But the reason I bring this up is that I started looking at why it is from a physics perspective that bars may be more haunted in general, and I think it has to do with the principle of capacitance. We're going to take a break. When we come back, I will explain what I mean about why that physically, once you start measuring the energy fields around bars, you can see why it's the perfect environment to create spooky spiritual activity. It's St. Paddy's weekend, and we're doing a St. Paddy's edition of the show. I'm Joshua P. Warren. If you want to know more about why that a bar would literally create more paranormal stuff, more manifestations, stick around till after this break. It's Speaking of Strange!
Well, a Scotsman clad in kilt left the bar one evening fair. And one could tell by how he walked that he'd drunk more than his share. He fumbled round until he could no longer keep his feet. And he stumbled off into the grass to sleep beside the street. Ring ding diddle little idio, ring da diddly io. He stumbled off into the grass to sleep beside the street. About that time two young and lovely girls just happened by. One says to the other with a twinkle in her eye, see yon sleeping Scotsman so strong and handsome built. I wonder if it's true what they don't wear beneath the kilt. Ring ding diddle little idio, ring da diddly io. I wonder if it's true what they don't wear beneath the kilt. They crept up on that sleeping Scotsman quiet as could be. Lifted up his kilt about an inch so they could see. And there, behold, for them to view beneath his Scottish skirt was nothing more than God had graced him with upon his birth. Ring ding diddle little idio, ring da diddly io, was nothing more than God had graced him with upon his birth. They marveled for a moment, then one said, we must be gone. Let's leave a present for our friend before we move along. As a gift they left a blue silk ribbon tied into a bow. Around the bonny star the Scots kilt did lift and show. Ring ding diddle little idio, ring da diddly io. Around the bonny star the Scots kilt did lift and show. Now the Scotsman woke to nature's call and stumbled towards a tree. Behind the bush he lifts his kilt and gawks at what he sees. And in a startled voice he says to what's before his eyes, oh, lad, I don't know where you've been, but I see you won first prize. Ring ding diddle little idio, ring da diddly idio. Oh, lad, I don't know where you've been, but I see you won first prize.
Yeah, we've got to play that for you. Every St. Paddy's, now I understand Scottish people are different from Irish people and they don't like to be confused, but around here a lot of us call ourselves Scots-Irish. It's that combination of Scottish people and Irish people, and around here the blend seems kind of natural to me. How about you, Forrest?
Very much so.
Shelley?
Oh, yes.
I've been told that there are more people who live around here in Western North Carolina who are of Scottish descent than there are in Scotland.
I've heard that.
Yeah. I presume it's true. Welcome back to Speaking of Strange. I'm Joshua P. Warren. We are talking about things that relate somehow or another to St. Paddy's and the connection between booze and spirits. Another one of my favorite drinks, it's a shot, that includes Jameson Irish whiskey is called the pickleback. Now, I first learned of a pickleback years ago when I went to Key West, Florida for the first time to investigate Robert the Haunted Doll. And I went into a bar, and they had a big sign saying, you know, picklebacks tonight, blah, blah, blah. And I said, what is a pickleback? Because I love pickles. And it turns out it's the simplest thing. It's two separate shot glasses. One shot glass is full of pickle juice, and the other is full of Jameson or a similar Irish whiskey. And you shoot the whiskey, and then you immediately shoot the pickle juice, and to me, the pickle juice just neutralizes all the things that you might not like about whiskey, and it's a really tasty experience. I love a pickleback. Forrest, have you had one?
I've had a couple with you.
What do you think about them, Forrest?
It's
they're good. There's nothing like you would think they taste, though. You first thinking whiskey, Irish whiskey and pickle juice? But no, I mean, like you said, they neutralize each other, and it's a very, almost refreshing kind of shot.
I love a pickle pack. Now, as a matter of fact, when I buy a jar of pickles anymore, I have trouble keeping the pickles wet because somehow or other the juice gets used up before the pickles are eaten. But you, Shelly, you know, you just don't look like you're into the pickleback.
It is disgusting.
Oh, come on!
I hate the pickleback. And what a way to ruin a good shot of whiskey.
It enhances the good shot of whiskey.
No. Ew.
You see, this is why we keep Shelly around here, because she often has the antagonistic perspective here. It's Forrest and I love a pickleback. Well, yeah, I don't know if you love it, but you...
I think it's good.
And you say it's just horrible?
It's disgusting.
Man.
Yeah.
Well, you know what I would like? One of my little wishes in life? I want everybody who listens to this show, who has any of their liver left, to go out and do a pickleback and then email us through speakingofstrange.com or shadowboxent@yahoo.com.
Or send us a Twitter picture.
Yeah, exactly. Twitter, go to @SOSHardwood or @Joshua P. Warren and tell us what your opinion of the pickleback is.
If they like it, I won't feel any bad feelings about it. It's just I don't particularly care for it.
And let me make it clear. You are a drinker. You like it?
Yes.
Yeah, but you just...
Yeah, I don't like the pickleback.
I think after the show, I'm going to give you one more stab at the pickleback here. Do you like pickles?
Yeah, I like pickles.
Okay, I don't get it. I don't see how you could like a pickle and not like a pickleback. Well, it's sour, salty. It's got all the good stuff in there. You know, I was in Chicago. I go to Chicago quite a bit, and you know that you have some like real Irish bars in Chicago. As close to the Irish bars as you're going to get in the U.S. A lot of Irish people have opened up Irish bars there, and I was in a bar with some friends. We just finished shooting a History Channel special. It was Stan Lee's Superhumans. And we're kind of celebrating a little bit, and we're closing the bar down. And this guy who has the Irish brogue, he tells me, he says, "Have you ever had the patties?" And I said, "Patties, I don't know what that is." And he said that in Ireland, a lot of the people there, you know, they think Jameson's good, but it's just like the mass marketed brand. A lot of the people in Ireland drink Paddy's, P-A-D-D-Y-S. And he poured me a shot of Paddy's, and I drank it straight, and I said, "Wow, this is incredibly smooth." And after that, I found it's very difficult to find Paddy's Irish whiskey in the U.S. I found a bottle one time in Charleston, South Carolina. I think you were there when I bought that.
Mm-hmm.
But it's really hard to find Paddy's where I live. So... another little tip, it's St. Paddy's weekend, so I'm telling you about Paddy's, not T, but D, P-A-D-D-Y, Paddy's Irish Liquor. But here's what I was getting at before the break. Okay, one of the big things that I always talk about when it comes to paranormal phenomena is the concept of capacitance. And the reason is, when people talk about paranormal stuff happening, especially of the ghostly kind, they're talking about an enormous amount of energy that just explodes at a particular place. You're talking about, you know, objects that fly off walls, glowing three-dimensional forms, people being touched. And I've always wondered, where does the power for this come from? Where does the literal power come from that allows these things to happen? What's the power supply? And so I began years ago studying the environment as a big capacitor. Now, a capacitor is something that stores up small amounts of electrical energy over time and then allows them to just sort of burst into a big discharge after they've reached a critical point. A very basic capacitor would be a non-conductor, like a piece of plastic, that separates two conductors, like two pieces of aluminum foil. A Leyden jar is a type of capacitor that was invented hundreds of years ago. So, essentially, not to get too technical, you can take a plastic Tupperware container, put aluminum foil on the outside, and then another layer of aluminum foil on the inside. When the two are not touching, gradually charge it up with, and there are a lot of different ways of doing that, and then you touch both of them, and boom, you get a big shock. Now, Forrest, you know very well
they're
what I'm
evil.
Talking about.
Evil.
In fact, I was talking about aluminum foil, but if you use water instead, well, now your conductor is three-dimensional. So you can store, yeah, exactly. Salt water you can store within the three-dimensional volume. So let's say you take a cup and you fill it full of salt water, and then you put another, like a plastic cup inside of that.
Right.
And then you fill that cup with salt water. You now have two layers of salt water separated by a piece of plastic. You charge it up by hooking it to a little Van de Graaff or something for a while, and then touch it, and bang! Right, Forrest?
Oh, yeah.
We actually saw one of our friends get knocked out with this technique one night, right?
Only one? I've seen that happen several times.
Yeah.
Playing around.
Good point. So, think about what a bar is. What they're doing is they're taking alcohol, which is a very good electrolyte, meaning that it's a wonderful conductor of electricity, and a glass bottle, which is a non-conductor, and they're stacking all this stuff up on a shelf, because that's what you see when you walk into a bar.
Right.
It's just stacks of rows of glass bottles side by side that are all full of a great electrically conducting liquid. And as if that weren't enough, there's sometimes a big mirror in the background, which kind of adds in some of the Dr. Raymond Moody psychomantium stuff, which now we're getting really out there. But the point is, I have gone to so many bars and tested the energy fields around those rows of bottles, and it's just insane the amount of electrical energy that's pulsating around those jars and bottles. So clearly, you have got one of the best power supplies you will ever find in society pulsating around those things, and that has a relationship to how ghostly phenomena is powered. That said, we're going to take a break. When we come back, I'm going to tell you a little bit about what you should keep in mind if you go ghost hunting. Is it bad to go ghost hunting when you're drunk? Or is it going to help you see things? And what are the realistic risks of drinking in a bar? Does it open you up to possession? Well, you might be surprised by the answer. It's the program where the unusual becomes usual. I'm your host, Joshua P. Warren, and this is Speaking of Strange.
Tim Finnegan lived in walking streets.
Right in the middle of the street, he was homeless.
Oh, a gentleman Irish, mighty odd.
Mighty odd indeed.
He'd a beautiful brogue, so rich and sweet.
Couldn't understand a word of him.
And a rise in the world, he carried a hod.
Big hod!
Wrong song.
Now Tim had a sort of a tippling way. With the love of the liquor, poor Tim was born.
I love the liquor, he did.
And to help him on his way each day, get a drop of the crather every morn.
No act for the law, I'm not your partner on the floor. Your trousers shake, wouldn't it? The truth that I told you, lots of fun at Finnegan's Wake.
One morning, Tim was rather full.
So full his eyes were brown.
And his head felt heavy, which made him shake. He fell off the ladder and he broke his skull.
he bounced.
And they carried him home, his corpse to wake.
What's awake?
I mean, you're not sleeping.
They rolled him up in a nice clean sheet.
No sheet!
And they laid him out upon the bed.
Everybody on the bed!
With a gallon of whiskey at his feet and a barrel of porter at his head. Whack for the bell, now dance your partner on the floor. You copper shake. Wasn't it the truth that I told you lots upon at Finnegan's Wake? His friends assembled at the wake.
Yeah, both of them.
And the widow Flanagan called for lunch.
Lunch!
First she brought in tea and cakes.
And some brownies.
Then pipes, tobacco, and whiskey punch. Biddy O'Brien began to cry. Such a nice, clean corpse, did you ever see?
Oh, brownies.
Tim of Arnon, why did you die? Shut your gob, said Patty McGee. Wife for the dough, you dash your partner on the floor. Your trousers shake. Wasn't it the truth that I told you lots of fun at Finnegan's Wake?
Oops.
And Maggie O'Connor took up the job.
About time to...
Oh, Biddy, says she, you're wrong, I'm sure.
I am sure, I talked us like that.
So Biddy fetched her a belt and the gob. And left her sprawling on the floor.
Well, that's a position we've all seen her in many times before under more favorable circumstances.
Civil war did then engage.
About time you got engaged.
Was woman to woman and man to man.
With him by
shillelagh law was all the rage. And a row and eruption soon began. Work for the dough, you dance your partner on the floor. Your trousers shake. The truth that I told you lots of fun at Finnegan's Wake. Then Mickey Maloney ducked his head as a bottle of whiskey flew at him. It missed, and landing on the bed, the whiskey scattered over Tim. Tim revives, bedad, he rises. Finnegan rising from the bed. Saying, whirl your whiskey around like blazes. Tutter and chase, do you think I'm dead? For the dough, you dance your partner on the floor. Your trousers shake. Wouldn't it the truth that I told you lots of fun at Finnegan?
In the last minutes of hour number two on tonight's special St. Patty's edition. Actually, part two of our St. Patty's editions here on Speaking of Strange. Coming up next hour, yes, it's the Dark 30 hour, when we dig into the more outrageous and controversial news, not for the kiddies, not for the easily offended. I hope that you will stick around for that if that's your cup of tea. So before the break, I was talking about the physical characteristics of a barb that might make it more subject to ghostly phenomena. And from time to time, people do ask me, hey, is it okay to drink before you go on a ghost hunt? Will I see more? Will I see less? Well, here's the reality. I have kind of a dual philosophy when it comes to this. On one hand, as a general rule, no, you shouldn't drink before you go on a ghost hunt because usually you're in dark places. They can be dangerous places. You might trip. You might hurt yourself. You might knock something over. I mean, you might not record your information properly. There are a lot of reasons not to go into a ghost hunt intoxicated. But when it comes to how it is going to affect your results, it doesn't matter if you're drunk or not. If you see a ghost and you don't properly document it, nobody's going to believe you anyway. So as far as your results are concerned from that standpoint, doesn't really matter. So it kind of depends on what the point is. But does drinking in a bar open you up to possession? Well, I tend to think that a lot of the things that we do for joy in life are really an attempt at escaping the physical body, which equals death. That's why roller coasters are fun. You're not supposed to feel that sensation. Right. It's a sensation that I'm going to die right now. And whenever you are drinking, I think that you're doing the same thing. That's why, you know, when you wake up the next morning, if you've had too much to drink, you feel awful.
And that's because you are poisoning your body a little bit. You're killing yourself just a little bit. And so you're bringing yourself closer to that state. Now, when you break your body down a little bit physically, then you also are opening up a little space there, I think, so that if there is some stray ambient spirit around, a little parasitic thing, it might be able to more easily access your mind-body connection and infiltrate. And therefore, you know, yes, if there are parasitic entities out there that can tap in to that mind-body relationship, then you are making it a lot easier for them when you're getting drunk. So, yes, hanging out in bars, drinking, especially around negative people, negative environments, it does pose a risk that will open you up to possession. So, I hope all that made sense. All I know is if you want to see just how bad people can get, if you want to know how crazy the world is becoming, well, you should stick around. Because we have our last hour of the show coming up after this break. It's part of the show we call the Dark 30 Hour. And we use it to talk about the more outrageous and controversial news, the more sordid and seedy material that you may not hear about so much the rest of the week. I am Joshua P. Warren. It's the show where the unusual becomes usual, and it is called Speaking of Strange.